Welcome to The Brainstorm, a podcast and video series from ARK Invest. Tune in every week as we react to the latest in innovation and reflect on how short-term news impacts our long-term views. To learn more, visit ARK-invest.com.
ARK Investment Management, LLC is an SEC-registered investment advisor. ARK and Public are unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to either firm marketing or selling the products or services of the other, and therefore ARK disclaims responsibility for any loss that may be incurred by Public's clients or customers. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK. An investor should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and/or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in the show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statements. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.
Welcome to The Brainstorm, episode 61. Frank, how many R's are there in strawberry?
Great question, because we now finally have an AI model that can tell you the correct answer. It's three.
Okay. And what is what was the release? What is strawberry, or better named production release 01 preview?
Yes. So last week, OpenAI unveiled their hotly anticipated next model called 01. The code name was Strawberry. And it is the first productized AI model that stops to think. So when you ask it a question, it will spend some period of time reasoning about the answer before spitting out kind of a conclusion or a summary. And this is commonly called chain of thought, where you used to have to do this after the fact, prompting the model with all these intricate ways of telling it to explain itself step by step. They've built that into the product now. And it results in significantly better performance across a variety of tests or skills, including math, science, PhD level questions. This stopping to think actually makes the model significantly better.
And so what does this do as far? Well, one, was that expected? It seems like that is the breakthrough, was finding out, hey, if you stop and think at inference, then it actually gets better, and that wasn't necessarily certain. Is that really the
breakthrough? I think the biggest thing is that there have been research papers talking about this kind of stopping and thinking and using chain of prompt for several years now, so that's not an entirely new idea. I think the biggest thing is that they found that there's kind of a scaling law at inference time, which means the longer it thinks, the results consistently get better. So it's kind of adding to what we know about scaling laws and training, which say that the more compute you spend training your model, it typically gets better, which is why we've seen so much increase in spending on training compute. And it seems like we're doubling the size of models every few months. We're now seeing that you can apply, there are similar scaling laws that exist on inference time when you're running the model. So when you have the model think longer, they've shown, OpenAI shows, that it actually has better results. Which means, especially for OpenAI's business, that rather than OpenAI spending more money on training time to make a model better, the customers can now choose to spend more money at inference time to make the model's results better, which actually turns a cost center into a revenue center for a model company that designs a product like this.
Just for those that may not understand, can you just explain the difference between training and inference and what this model means for maybe the chip space and just generally the direction of the market and where this could take it?
Yeah, so generally you can think of training as building the model or teaching it things, and inference actually using the model or using the knowledge that it has. And when you're training a model, you're basically feeding a ton of data into it, into a neural network, and iterating towards a set of parameters, they're called, that best represent that data. You can think of it kind of as teaching the model to memorize facts. And then when you're inferencing the model, it's using those facts to try and answer your question in the best way possible. But what is kind of the interesting thing about the stopping and thinking is the model is actually learning reasoning behavior or different thinking patterns. And there's a chance that you could actually cut out some of this basic fact memorization and make a smaller model that's just really good at thinking and reasoning that can then answer questions more effectively. Which is kind of what's happening here. I don't know if that's the smoothest, the simplest explanation, but
is it fair to say, right? It's like, and I've seen some tweets from Andre Karpathy on this, where, you know, you're training a huge model and it's memorizing the world of facts, when it's like you could have a small model that can actually think, and then it can just Google those facts. So it's like you don't need to embed the facts as part of the model itself. You can just have like a small thinking model that can then use the existing tools in the world.
Yes, that's the vision.
When do we get to there?
Well, the current model can think and reason, but it cannot use tools yet. And we don't know the current size of it because all of these foundation model companies are getting much more secretive about the products that they're rolling out. So developers can pick up and use the model now and basically set a budget for how long you want it to think. But it can't out of the box go and search the web or write and run its own code, which are features that the current or previous generation of models of GPT-4o could all do. So that's kind of roadmap. Hopefully it comes quickly. And consumer or business users can go into ChatGPT and play with these features now. Both free and paid users should have access to them. So it's kind of on the roadmap to add these kind of tooling capabilities in, which I think should make it, you know, for the everyday user, not just the research component of it, a much more of a step up in capability than what you see now, where the model stops and thinks and gives you a better result than before. But it doesn't maybe unlock as much new capability as once we get these tools implemented into it.
And to follow up on Nick's question, what is this NVIDIA, king of training chips? What does this mean now that there's more time spent on inference?
Yes, there are a lot of chip startups out there, and they've generally been mostly focused on inference lately. You could think of training as the necessary initial infrastructure investment, and then inference as the workload that scales as you actually ship products into production. So there's clearly going to be a large need for inference in traditional, let's say, predictive AI, pre-gen AI. Inference is the vast majority of workload in terms of chip time. It probably will look the same in the generative AI world, and this definitely shifts marginally more time spent on inference than would have if models weren't heading in this direction. I think what's unclear is which chip providers will be best positioned. There's certainly a latency factor here where for consumer experiences that are interacting directly with the model, the lowest latency product typically is going to be seen as the better one. So companies like Grok or Cerebras that have shown very fast inference capabilities could be better positioned, or their chips more in demand now than previously. But at the same time, this is a very rapidly changing landscape. And having one AI compute platform that's pretty good and consistently getting better at both is also a good option, which is why NVIDIA has found themselves in such a good position, because it really seems like it's the best infrastructure for training and it's pretty darn good at inference. And you can buy one chip and use it for both no matter how the workload changes. And they can ship software updates that make the inference side 2x better overnight, which is one of the things that they did last year. So it's a very fluid and rapidly changing set of demands on the workloads, and then that's how the chip companies are positioned.
I have an observation that might lead to a question, but I find it interesting that, you know, when I go now to ChatGPT, I have access to 5 different models, and each one is better at certain, you know, it has unique aspects to it. And from a consumer lens, it's, I would say, interesting that they've gone this route instead of just providing, you know, the search bar and prompt bar, and then on the back end, choosing which model to pick for that specific query and task. Do you think we get there? And why would the strategy be to, you know, have these segmented models out there and letting the consumer choose which one to use? Wouldn't the AI itself know better which model is best for which task at hand?
Yeah, I think that's definitely something they're going to want to do to simplify things for the end user. And they've changed the default over time too. I'm not sure what it is right now in the free version, but I think as they come out with new models, they have one that they probably think is the best performance to cost ratio, and they set that as the default. And over time, you could think of as, you know, the system gets better and they reach greater scale, using some small inference to pick what's the best model to answer the best question. So I think that's probably going to come in the future.
And yeah, I see, you know, when I look, it's GPT-4.0, best for complex tasks, 0.1 preview, uses advanced reasoning, 0.1 mini, faster at reasoning. I would assume we get to a point where, you know, you're just prompting and it's choosing on the back end. I think that's a much simpler approach to this
problem. I thought it was interesting that the reasoning one, not better at writing.
Yeah.
It's like a classic engineer versus liberal arts. It's like, we got this guy studying physics, and boy, can they not write. And then it's like, you go to the liberal arts one, you ask it how many R's are in strawberry, and he's like, oh, I don't do math. I just...
How has your own use of it been so far, Frank?
I think pretty good. I haven't, you know, it came out on a Thursday and we're recording this on a Monday, so I haven't done a lot of hard work tasks with it yet. There's a few like internal benchmarking questions that I have that I ask models, like one that involves spatial reasoning that I stole from Brett. And it was the first model that I tried that got that right. So that was a significant improvement, that it could actually, you know, reason about space in a way that was better than previous models. And then they have, you know, to try and guide people on like different ways you can use the models, they have kind of like the preset questions that you can automatically ask, like build me a workout plan or a diet or things like that. And I've tried it on older models. I tried it on this one. I think it's marginally better. But a lot of my like usage, like especially at work, is either having a model like write and run code or pasting in an image and having it do something with that image, whether it's like extracting data or answering a question. And so until they add in coding and web search and multimodality, it probably isn't going to be a significant step up in terms of pure productivity, especially because the base capability is already so good that going from, let's say, graduate level science question answering to PhD level question answering, I don't have enough PhD level questions to ask the model that it's actually pushing the frontier of my own usage forward right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Have you done a comparison with Replit agent versus 0.1 as far as coding?
I have not, but Replit's coding agent is based on OpenAI models. So I assume that as the base model coding capability gets better, Replit's capabilities get much better. And that is different with their latest coding agent release than, say, 6 or 12 months ago, where they had their kind of own fine-tuned coding assistant. And I generally found ChatGPT based on GPT-4 to be higher powered because it was just a bigger, more up-to-date, better model. But now with Replit's new strategy and the coding agent, including some OpenAI models in it, I think it's a much better positioning for the product.
There was a question asked on Brainstorm Friday, which was around, you know, Sam and I are prompting this new model. We're asking the same question. Maybe it's worded slightly different. If Sam asks it first and it takes, say, 45 seconds, but it gives a sufficient answer that Sam's happy with, is it going to take the same allotted time to answer my exact question? Or will it learn and have a feedback, like a positive or negative feedback loop with users, so that it doesn't have to inference and reason for as much time if it's answering the same question?
Yeah. So as of right now, we don't know. There's nothing that would lead us to believe that they're doing any sort of caching on the back end that would basically be like taking a similar query and using a similar previous response. So I don't think that's happening, but it could in the future as they, again, you know, optimize for costs. But part of the fun part of these models is it gives a new and organic response every time. So it'd probably have to be implemented in a different way than caching for traditional web search happens, where, you know, if you Google, you know, what was the score of the NFL game yesterday, Google has that cached and is going to reuse the same answer every time. They're not running all of the same compute. Is there a new way for the model to get better over time? OpenAI is strategically hiding the inner thoughts or the reasoning of the model from the end user. So you don't actually see exactly what the model is thinking as it pauses and reasons about your answer and ultimately spits out the summary. And that could be, and likely is, a very important set of data that can be fed back into training loops in the future, so that there's kind of a network effect that gets built up. As more and more people are using the model and as it has more time spent reasoning, those actual thoughts can be fed back into what's called a reinforcement learning training cycle for the model that does make it better at thinking over time based on thoughts that it's previously had.
So there's a lot of hype about Strawberry. Did it live up to the hype in your mind? Is this a whole new trajectory? It's like, wow, OpenAI is doing something other people can't do. Does this change anything in your mind, or is this the continued trajectory that needed to occur in order to meet our expectations?
I think that it is the trajectory that needed to occur to meet our expectations. They released a new model and it got a lot better on certain benchmarks, and there's still both technical features to add and productization to happen on top of that. So I think, you know, the rumors of a $1,000 or $2,000 a month subscription, obviously we're not at that point where the product is that much more advanced that there's that much willingness to pay, but it's kind of a building block in that way. And I think the interesting thing will be, do the other foundation model companies, does Anthropic, Meta, Google push in a similar direction, or is there some divergence here? Because again, like, we know less about GPT-4 than we knew about GPT-3, and we know even less about this O1 model. And it does seem like it's a new class. It's much better than the state of the art in certain capabilities, benchmark-wise, and it has a new behavior where it stops to think. So will the others follow, and will there be a bigger lag because of, you know, some discovery that OpenAI has had? And I think it's too early to see what the competition is going to do yet.
And I think just from a convergence side to wrap this up, it's interesting, right? We were talking about humanoid robots, and this is probably great because you want a humanoid robot to stop and think before it does something, but maybe not as applicable to an autonomous car where the inference needs to happen quite rapidly. So just some thoughts in the back of the mind as new scaling laws emerge for breakthroughs in capability.
Well, I think to what you said, Frank, this is the step towards more agentic behavior, which is, I think, where the real unlock is in terms of generative AI. Like, what we have now, I think we'll look back on and be like, you know, that was like, to be excited about what we have now versus what's coming. We'll look back and say, wow, that was, you know, interesting, but it really didn't, you know, provide that much actual value compared to what it does in the future.
Right. We're in the faster horse phase of innovation as opposed to the right. The car.
We're very right. Early. We're very early.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. We'll see everyone next week with more AI breakthroughs.
Thank you, everyone.